Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Hello, I'm Alison Larkin, writer, comedian, narrator, and host of the Jane Austen podcast. Join me as we embark on a journey through Austen's timeless stories, starting with Pride and Prejudice. The Jane Austen podcast with Alison Larkin is available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello and welcome to the IGN UK podcast. This is a Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom special. Another special.
Ooh. And much like the dinosaurs might want to usurp man, Cardi was trying to usurp you as host.
We thought, you know, it's E3 week, biggest games event in the world this weekend. Yeah. Let's talk about dinosaurs for
absolutely.
An hour.
Absolutely.
E3 week's next week.
Also,
They'll get their fill next week.
Jurassic World and just Park in general is better than anything that's going on at E3.
Is it?
I'll stick that out there, mate. Absolutely.
And
you agree.
You put me on that.
My name is Gavin Murphy. I'm joined by Daniel Krupper and Simon Cardi.
Hey.
Who either saw the film last night, Cardi.
I did see it last night.
Don't say anything about it. Or Krupper and I saw it a couple of weeks ago.
I've got to say something about it. It'd be a boring podcast if I say nothing.
Yeah, but not yet, is what I said.
Fucking
hell. So, this is going to be a big old Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom podcast. We're going to have a little chat at the beginning. No spoilers. Then we've got a huge old interview with the director, Jay Boner, that Daniel and I did. We were very hungover for the interview, but we hold it together really well. I've listened to it back since. It was the day after we went to Secret Cinema, I believe.
You were nursing a Lucozade.
Yes, during the interview.
You were doing this mad thing with that Lucozade that I've never spoken to you about. Because obviously we're mic'd up and stuff, doing an audio interview. You kept putting the lid on off after every sip.
I had to, like,
What's he doing?
I had to have something.
It's better you play with that than other things.
So. Come on, mate. Hmm? But we interviewed Jay Bonet. That's going to be coming up in a little bit, as well as a big old spoiler chat about the film. But what if you haven't seen the film yet? It could be American people. It's not coming out in America for fucking yonks.
Oh, yeah. It's because of the World Cup. They brought it forward. But if you're feeling a bit disappointed about that being American, don't worry. Yeah. You get Ant-Man and the Wasp a month earlier than us.
Yeah, that's pretty good. There you go. Really. I did a review for the site, and I did see loads of people on it going, why are you reviewing it now? I can't watch it till the 22nd.
Right. Reviews usually come out before films come out.
Yeah. And you're not spoiling it in the review, are you? It'd be review if you spoiled it.
Well, someone had to go me for spoiling the review for using footage that they hadn't seen. I was just like, mate, it's in...
The footage
is there. I've got it from Universal, and it's on their YouTube channel. It's not on me.
Absolutely insane.
I don't know if that's
on me. You shouldn't have used that Chinese rip, though. That was well out of order.
What people should have maybe gathered from the trailer is something is going on.
You don't know what's going on in the film.
On Isla Nublar.
Oh, there's a commotion.
Yeah. So I've always said Isla, but everyone in the film says Isla.
I know.
What's going on?
It's Isla.
But I trust them.
It's not Isla Fisher.
I don't know if I trust myself. But it was Mauricio Isla, I believe, the Uruguayan wingback.
So
just confusing the situation even more.
Yeah.
That's undermining your point, mate.
I know, so I'm very confused about that word.
But yeah, it's all kicking off on Isla.
It's an island, Nublar. It's not an island.
Exactly. I feel like we need to consult Spanish people.
Yeah.
Spanish speakers.
They probably know.
Yeah.
I feel like they wouldn't let Jeff Goldblum say it in a film if it wasn't
real. They say it in the original? Did they ever say Isla?
I'm not sure, but they do say it in Lost World. Jeff Goldblum says Isla. in The Lost World.
At least they're consistent.
Yeah.
You've got to give them that.
But yeah, Isla Nubla is being ravaged by a volcano.
Natural disasters, eh?
But I've actually got a mate who was on the island before it was kicking off, and he managed to get me a copy of the Jurassic World Employee Handbook.
Very good.
So I just thought I would go through some of my favourite bits of it with you guys, and also see if you guys could get a job working at Jurassic World.
What kind of job are we talking?
Knowing what happens there, I don't know if I'd want... If you offered a job, say they were building it next year, they offered you a job.
I'm there.
Are you fucking mental? It's dinosaurs.
But I've seen what happens every time.
But you haven't, have you? Because I visit.
But you could be part of the solution. You could be there stopping it.
Well, what's my job? Am I just like... working in a gift shop, or am I like a scientist?
We're putting you in a costume.
Mate,
I am the dinosaur.
You're Ernie the egg. And like, he's young John Hammond.
Yeah. Could at least be Mr. DNA. An egg.
Yeah.
But that's the thing, though. People don't know that things have happened because the original events of what happened when Malcolm, Grant and Sadler went to the island, those have been sort of kept under wraps.
Covered up.
Malcolm, like, shouted his mouth off about it, but really, he was made to look like a fool, and everyone thought he was
because no one would have gone to the park.
No one saw it. So, all the stuff that we know from Jurassic Park and The Lost World, all this shit going down.
We know what happened in Jurassic World.
Yeah, no, but that's what I'm saying. When they were building Jurassic World originally, though,
it worked perfectly fine for years.
Yeah.
It's only when, again, they only get punished when they push beyond their means. Yeah. They've almost got to the point in Jurassic World where they have mastered that technology. They're keeping the regular dinosaurs perfectly fine. Yeah. It's when they push it again.
It's when you try and make these new ones.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously, this is a job interview. So let me just tell you a little bit about...
So are we both interviewing for one?
You're both interviewing jobs.
It is weird that you look like a young John Hammond. So this could have been like how it had gone down. Like you were fresh off the back of your flea circus success.
I'd like to think that if I was young John Hammond, I'm not interviewing for the shop boy.
Mate, you're there for the birth of every egg.
This is a weird... Can you imagine if weird interviews are actually one person interviewing two people at the same time competing for the same job?
That more like The Apprentice, isn't it?
Have you never done a group interview? I've done a group interview.
Oh, kind of, but it wasn't...
The company that we work with in this office, they did it the other week. Yeah.
Oh, I don't think I'd like that.
Oh. Well, let me just tell you a little bit about what's expected of you, right?
What job am I applying for here?
I'll tell you. Like, I make decisions.
Okay, I just want to work. Can you tell me where I'm going to work?
Based on the interview.
I'm listening.
Based on the interview, I'll give you your role.
Oh, okay.
I bet his first question is like, how much are we talking?
Yeah. So this is what's expected of you from the official Jurassic World Employee Handbook, which I bought, which I got from my mate on the island.
From the Amazon.
What is expected of you? Every employee at Jurassic World reflects the ethics and integrity of all of us who work here. We insist on high standards because we want our guests to trust us and know we will always behave with integrity. This section spells out how Jurassic World employees are expected to conduct themselves at all times.
With a smile.
Okay. He's naked inside the egg.
The best thing about this employee handbook, which I got off my mate, is there's a conceit all the way through it.
That is real.
As you can see all the way through it, that it's Claire's done the book before the park has opened, and she's put little post-its in it going,
annotations.
Oh, Owen, I'll probably hate myself for this, but could you take a look at our new employee handbook? I'd love your input on the asset and safety sections in particular. Just please try to keep the snarky comments to a minimum. So there's like this weird, there's this weird thing all the way through it where there's like fake post-it notes. With like,
it's very much like
Claire and Owen having a conversation.
It's very much like Vladimir Nabokov's Pale Fire.
Yeah, it's weird.
He was using annotations as part of the central text.
Honestly, it's all the way through it.
Well, there's more of those than actual book.
This is like a weird coquettish love story being told in post-its. Yeah.
Also, at one point, there's just a colouring in section. In the employee handbook for some reason.
Are they employing toddlers?
For fun and relaxation. Anyway, so this is the standards of conduct. Whether your job is in the theme park, resort, or the lab, we expect employees to act professionally at all times. This means being friendly and helpful to guests, respectful to superiors and co-workers, Cardi, and performing your job well. We also expect you to be punctual. Yep. You're both good at that. To treat park equipment and property with care. You're both very good at that. And to refrain from cursing, violence, a little bit, or the use of alcohol or drugs. There is no smoking. Forgot to put like a full stop or anything. That's good. So, any questions so far?
I can't drink.
Not while you're working, time. You mental.
Can it?
You know you can.
It's encouraged.
So that's what's expected of you.
That is really true, actually. There's not many jobs where you can just drink at once.
I just bring in a bottle every morning.
Guys,
it's a hard life.
I know it's a bit all business so far. But we do take care of our own.
Like the colouring section.
We do take care of our own. Our employee cafeteria serves a wide variety of healthy, balanced meals 7 days a week. Here's a sample of a weekly menu. Sunday, Brunchosaurus. Monday...
Let me say what it is.
No, it doesn't. Tuscany baked lasagna. Tusk is with a K. Tuesday, T-Rex style tacos.
Wednesday. Well, like he's made them.
They could have come out better.
So he's like, dropping
they could have come up with better, like T-Rex Mex or T-Rex bone steak. There's so much
T-Rex
better one.
Mex.
There's so
like
much better. Yeah, there's so much better. I should have written this book. That should be my job.
Mammoth sized meatloaf.
Is that just like meatloaf flavor?
It's just a big meatloaf.
This egg stinked Benedict. No.
What?
Triceratops, turkey, tetrazzini.
They're just adding dinosaur names.
Pan fried.
Have you just noticed that now?
not even an attempt at a pun.
But the best thing,
Velociraptor, gammon, and eggs.
The best thing
it
is,
it doesn't make sense.
There's two references to mammoths in that week of menus, Tuscany and mammoth, and there's barely any reference to fucking dinosaurs. Also, a little fun extra. In addition to employee discounts for food and souvenirs, Jurassic World offers our employees unlimited free admission to all attractions on days off, except on holidays or holiday weekends, just so you know. So
that's pretty standard, I think. Really,
Health benefits, they're very good. So if you get the job, Jurassic World will cover the cost of these required immunizations. Hepatitis A, hepatitis B, typhoid, yellow fever, malaria, diphtheria, meningitis, typhoid fever, polio, Tdap, MMR, varicella, pneumonia, rotavirus, Zika virus, and rabies for dinosaur bites and scratches. So,
could you do me a Japanese encephalitis?
It's, I don't have a book, mate. It's not
a lot of injections, that.
Maybe some tablets.
Any questions?
We'll
give you a massive egg-shaped suppository.
I don't want to be the Eggman.
Load you up. I love you turning up in the egg. You look like Dizzy cosplay.
any questions yet? Sick leave, you say? Oh, yeah. I'll tell you about sick leave, Simon. Jurassic World employees get 8 paid sick days per year. Senior employees...
America.
Get 11.
Is that good? Is that because we're like offshore Costa Rica, you can do whatever the fuck you want with like workers' rights?
8 sounds a lot, though, doesn't it?
8 paid sick days. Right, sorry, I thought you said 8 leave days.
No. Sick leave, yeah.
What government
eight
do I have to...
8 paid sick days per year.
Do I have to immigrate here to? Is Island Nuba owned by the US?
Costa Rica is a dependency of America, is it? Is it not a dependency? It's like Guam, is it?
America,
So
have I made that up?
8 paid sick days is pretty good, I think, isn't it? Senior employees get 11. I don't understand why that goes up, because what? You get... sicker if you're older. I suppose that's true.
At my old place, you got a day every 5 years you're at the company extra. That's not a lot,
horrible,
is it?
Right?
Yeah, I'm absolutely wrong there. It's not quite
really.
What countries?
So maybe it's his own...
Puerto Rico, you think?
Puerto Rico, that's what I'm thinking of. Sorry.
Every single person in Jurassic World that I saw was vaguely American. Like, the guy running the gyrosphere, he's like, it's my first day or whatever. Like, I just work here.
Well, it's going to be like Disney World, where you can just go and apply to work a summer there as a kid. Kids in England do that. They apply, and then you go out and just work for like 4 months or on a gap year.
Have I got the job yet?
No, you haven't got the job yet. We also have a stress reduction program, because we believe at Jurassic World, a healthy mind leads to a healthy life.
I agree. So,
let's face it, even the greatest job in a beautiful place like Isla Nublar has its stressors. Just talk to some of our dinosaur handlers.
Especially the dead ones.
Right then, guys. No questions so far?
No
one's so dead yet.
Sounds great.
No.
That's what they tell you.
Sounds
all right.
Like a great thing to do with my gap year.
Next bit is a bit of dinosaur trivia from that I found in the Jurassic World employee handbook.
That your mate gave you?
That my mate who worked at Jurassic World gave me. Question number one. These are all multiple choice. Where does the word for dinosaur come from? A book.
What are you going to say? Like a language source.
B, a book. The Greek word dinos, meaning terrible, and sauros, meaning lizard. Or C, dinosaurs were never real. Fuck off. This whole park is an abomination.
Oh, I see where this is going.
It might be B.
I think it's B, but I want to say C just for the layoff.
You're going
no.
C?
No, I'm not. Oh. No.
Oh,
I know.
All right, B then. You both got B. Fuck.
Can never lose a quiz, even in a joke context. Yeah,
can't let myself say the wrong answer.
Put B.
I'm really annoyed.
Don't let me sound like an idiot.
All right. How many continents were dinosaur fossils found on? A, loads.
Jesus Christ.
B, 7, including Antarctica. What says in a book? C.
It's that one then, isn't it?
Dinosaurs were never real, so there's no fossils. Shut up.
Loads.
I might go B again. I reckon we might get this job.
I would have taken loads because 7's.
What, like... all of them?
No, I hear it. 7, I would say is a lot.
If what
I,
someone say? Said, well, there's more. Ours could be more than
B. We're saying,
well,
yeah.
10, it might have been, there might have been less when the dinosaurs
were. Question number 3. Final question.
Body tectonic plates, what next?
Final question.
Always moving.
How big is a Stegosaurus's brain?
Massive.
That's one of them, isn't it? They don't have them. They're not real. That's
A, massive.
I bet C is
working to go too long.
I bet C is it doesn't exist. Of course, it don't have one.
A, massive. Big dinosaur equals big brain. B, a walnut. C, dinosaurs never had brains because only things made by God have brains. Get a fucking grip.
I'm going walnut.
I'm going to go walnut as well.
You fucking aced that, boys. Except you had a little bit of a blip at the beginning where you said,
"Well, I've got
lost his head."
Yeah, went mad for a minute.
It's going really well so far.
Do you want that sort of character at the park? Really, someone who can go mad for a minute.
Any questions?
No.
Oh, shit, where's that page gone?
I'll
cut this bit out below.
Can I just ask what your role at the park is?
What?
Who are you?
Well, I've got the only handbook going, so I rule everything. Okay.
Will I be reporting to
you? I'm gonna read out the dress codes, and based on these, you let me know which one you want.
Because
I've been so impressed by you guys. You can do what you want.
Not, your background
not,
check, have you?
Not a qualifications. Yeah, I like the sound of the lab coat.
Yeah. Here we go then. Grey shirts and pants, military grade boots, and full tactical gear when engaged on a mission.
That's not for me.
Ooh, I don't know.
So remember that one?
Yeah, tactical gear.
Tan shirt with Jurassic World patch on the shoulder, blue pants, comfortable walking shoes.
I can see you in that.
Yeah?
Ooh, I can see you out of it.
Ooh,
in a big egg.
Brown shirt, brown pants, a matching cap with Jurassic World emblem.
Dog's body, that.
Grey lab coat with business attire underneath. Safety goggles, latest gloves, and closed-toed lab shoes. Khaki shirt with a park emblem, matching pants or shorts, and wide-brim safari hat.
Ooh.
Wait, that is you.
Gav, can I ask you one last question about that final outfit?
Yeah.
Does it come with big socks?
It does not. Not this one.
Can I still wear them though?
Can I wear any footwear I want with that one, does it say?
Yeah, you'd be all right.
I'm definitely going with that one.
You're going to go petting zoo as end. You're going to be a petting zoo attendant.
Of course.
So have you got your own khaki shirt with a park emblem?
Well, I'll see you provide that for me.
I'd have to
bring my own.
Matching pants or shorts and wide brim safari hat. I've seen you in a wide brim safari hat.
Have you?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I've got like.
I haven't.
Well, yeah, we've got one in the office. Well, it's kind of, it's more of a cowboy hat, but
it is a cowboy hat.
That's Rick's hat like from Walking Dead.
I've got like an old floppy cricket hat. It's basically the same, but white.
I'll give you the hat. I'll give you the.
Give me your uniform. That'd be nice.
Daniel,
I'm going lab coat.
You're gonna go green lab coat. Daniel, it might shock you. You are gonna be a lab technician. Ooh. So yeah, lab technician. And
what do you know about DNA?
Petting zoo attendant. Guys, I'm just happy to have you on board, I'll be honest.
Brilliant, thank you.
Are we the first two that have been hired?
No, I hired some on the bus this morning as well, on the way in. There's five of you flying out. One of them's a bit of a nightmare, and he does smell. So
he's got a big Hawaiian shirt on.
Yeah.
Just glad I don't have to wear the egg.
Oh, you'll be wearing the egg in a petting zoo, mate.
You need an egg in a week, mate.
Yeah.
Mate, I'll splice you with some fucking egg.
Right.
Egg boy.
Dizzy.
I really hope Juan Antonio Bayona never listens to this podcast that he's on. Be like, can you imagine his assistant's like, JA, we got this podcast.
I really enjoyed that interview.
He said that on the way out. He said, I really enjoyed that interview. Thank you very much. And then we were like, oh, yeah, we had a really good time as well. And he's like, oh, I'm really looking forward to later.
Glad you didn't do that quiz with him.
Do you want to say what else happened when we were walking out of the podcast with him?
No.
What? We caught him humming something. We were walking down the corridor outside the studio. He was just humming the Jurassic Park theme tune. And we just went, you humming the theme tune? And he's always like, yes, wicked, isn't it?
He was like, yeah, it's great.
It is.
He's
good.
A really lovely man.
He's brilliant, man. He was really good. Someone on Twitter had bought me a Jurassic Park mug that said T-Rex on it, and it hadn't been used. It literally came the day before. So I asked him if he wanted a cup of tea. He said, yeah, I'll get a peppermint tea. So I made him a tea in it, and I gave it to him. And as I gave it to him, I kind of regret it. I was like, what are you doing, you idiot? And then I went, oh.
Should have used the orphanage one.
Yeah. The one that changes colour, like the It mug. I said, have you got that? He was like, I got loads of this shit now. Like, he's like, I got Monday Rex. He went through all the different mugs that he's got. Hopefully that's on the recording and you can hear that right now. There's lots of spoilers in this as well, remember. Including the types of mugs that he has. So one thing we always ask people when they come, do you like the mug?
Yeah.
We got in specially for you.
I have so many different versions of these now.
Oh, really?
Like Monday Rex and T-Rex and Jurassic Weekend and things like that, you know. My name.
Just Jurassic Tat.
Do you get sent all the toys?
Not really. I'm not asking for them.
Okay. You get to play with the real thing.
Yeah, I used to have my home full of toys, and I changed now the place, and I try not to have.
I'll bring all my toys in here and dump them on these shelves.
Good.
Yeah.
We've actually got your dinosaur hands outside, like the dinosaur claw things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have a real dinosaur hand?
I've got real dinosaur hands. I still got my T-Rex that I got when I was a kid for the original Jurassic Park, but that's at home.
It's a good nick as well.
It's very good. I've kept it very preserved. Speaking of that, do you remember the first time you saw Jurassic Park?
Yeah, totally. I was, I saw it in a movie theater in Spain, and I think it's the only time in my life I was sure I was witnessing something that will pass the test of time. Kind of like I thought this is movie history, because when I saw the first time the image of the Brachiosaurus in such a realistic way, I thought from this moment on, everything that you could imagine, you can see it on the big screen in a realistic way. And for me, that was a pivotal moment. And that was my biggest impression watching the movie.
It's weird to see a film and think it's instantly iconic. And we're a huge Jurassic Park fans, and we've spoken about this so many times over the years, how for my cousin's generation had Star Wars. For my generation, it's Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
That was the film that I was obsessed with as a child. And just seeing it for the first time on the big screen, every moment feels instantly iconic.
Yeah.
What was it? Is it a huge film in Spain?
Yeah.
Like, people similarly obsessed by it?
Yeah, sure. Everywhere. Yeah, everywhere. I mean, it's the first time I do a sequel, and this is the first time I experience this level of expectations and dealing with all the fan phenomena. It's great. I think it's great when you have so many people waiting for what you're doing, but at the same time, it's a big responsibility. But it's great, and it's interesting what you're talking about the iconic shots, because this is something that one of the things that I love the most about the Steven Spielberg movies is how he's able always to capture the whole meaning of a film in a single frame. And of course, I was trying to do that in this one too.
So you say, like, obviously it was, you're doing a sequel that everybody is really into. Everyone's into the series. What made you want to take on the project in the first place?
Well, the first thing that Colin Trevorrow told me, the first conversation that we had, he said, we thought about you because of The Orphanage. And I was like, what? And I was so seduced about that. I was like, of course I wanted to do a Jurassic movie, but after that pitch, I thought, yeah, I want to do it. And it's true that it's a very interesting Jurassic movie. It takes you to places that you've never seen before. And from the moment that you have the island exploding, it's a statement. It's like telling you, okay, forget what you've seen so far. Yeah. We're going to a very different place.
Well, that's actually the funny thing. We went to like a presentation of all of Universal's movies at the end of last year, and we saw an early version of the first trailer. And it's hard from that first trailer. I think a lot of people were like, oh, a lot of the comments on the first trailer is like, I've seen the whole movie, because people assume that's the end sequence, is the volcano blowing up. But when you see the movie, you realize, oh no, this is a very different type of film. You're kind of almost doing away with the island and going into something very different.
Yeah, I think that's one of the most clever things about the movie, is that it starts where all the blockbusters finish. And it's kind of challenging when you do that. I mean, it reminds me a little bit what we did in The Impossible, because we had the tsunami at the very beginning of the movie, and then it's like, okay, so now how can you keep going with the story after showing such a massive event in the story? But I think it's a great challenge. I think somehow I really like the idea how the movie turns this kind of moral debate, because this moral tale. I think when you read the original books from Michael Crichton, and of course the original movie from Steven Spielberg, it's a moral tale where you find these villains doing the wrong thing with science, you know? And the movie makes this beautiful change, turning this moral tale into a fairy tale, a moral fairy tale, where you find, at the end of the story, you find a prince, a castle, a dragon. I thought that was beautiful.
It was so funny. After we went to see the movie the night, we went for dinner afterwards to discuss it. And I think we used the word fairy tale in the opening shots. Like when Claire goes to the Lockwood estate, there's something quite Beauty and the Beast-like about it. There's something quite magical. Yeah. But then later in the movie, when you return, it becomes like this more gothic house, almost like the fall of the House of Usher. Like, this is a place of secrets. Uh-huh. And ghosts and overreaching. Is that what Colin Trevorrow said to you when he said The Orphanage? Did he start laying out these elements? And how many of those elements did you bring to the movie?
We work in the original idea with Colin. And the first thing that he told me was, this is the second half is going to be like a haunted house movie. This is why I thought about you. And then we push all these elements forward in order to create an even better story. But I think somehow, even though it's a very different context, it's very faithful to the DNA of the saga. Because if you think about the first Jurassic Park, it has a massive set piece in the center, which is the T-Rex scene. And then it moves to a tighter and more claustrophobic place. And you find one of the probably the best or one of the best scenes in the franchise, which is the Velociraptors in the kitchen. Mm, yeah. And somehow that's the same architecture that we're following in this one, even though we change the context and it's a very different world. And we're opening the door to a very different Jurassic universe at the end of the story. The mood and the emotions that we go through, all those that sense of terror and suspense was already in the first Jurassic Park, and we all love that sense of terror. We love the way we were terrified by the first Jurassic Park.
When you get a project like this, do you go back and How many times do you rewatch Jurassic Park in preparation?
I've watched it so many times, you know.
Do you sit down and like were you saying, like, you were analysing the fact that it has this big set piece and then it moves into these more claustrophobic spaces, the tunnels, the generators? Are you doing that, or is it more like an intuition thing?
Yeah, I think you're right. It's more like an intuition thing. I think it's more not just Jurassic Park, but Steven Spielberg movies and the way he builds up the suspense, which is very Hitchcockian. So it was more about trying to capture that. And also there's this the sense of terror that Steven Spielberg is able to build in creating his movies, but also the fun. And for example, there is one element that I like that we did some of that in this one, is the slapstick, the visual gags, yeah. Yeah. That has to do with very different references. There are moments in a lot of moments in the cinema of Steven Spielberg that remind me silent movies.
Yeah.
And comedy, that, like a kind of like a Buster Keaton comedy.
Yeah.
And we had some of that in this new one. I check some Buster Keaton movies again because I love the way Steven Spielberg is able to infuse, to put comedy in a very visual way in his stories, even though they're dark and more suspenseful as this one.
Yeah, we were sitting next to each other when we watched the lava scene where Chris is down. You know. Like, that is mental.
Yeah.
It's so silly because, you know, it's pretty high stakes. They've left him to die, essentially, and he has to sort of move himself around. We were laughing so much, but it's like, you obviously, that is meant to be funny.
Exactly. And it's kind of interesting because, that you know, the Jurassic movies, they are a lot of fun,
yeah.
But at the same time, they play very relevant and timely themes, important subject matters, you know, like the relation that man has towards science or nature. So it has this kind of like poignant background, but at the same time, it's able to bring a lot of fun. And I think we shouldn't forget that it's also a lot of fun that people want to see these movies because they want to have a great time.
It's quite exhilarating, and the whole sequence with the lava and the volcano blowing and them chasing down the mountain, that just feels, I know it's not one continuous shot obviously, but it goes so smoothly into the water. And I was just laughing next to Gav because I was just so excited by it.
Yeah.
And I particularly loved the bit where they're in the water at the end and Chris is like swimming off, Chris's character is swimming off. Like, how do you even begin to start making a sequence like that? Because there's so many elements. How do you even begin to do it?
Well, I think this is the whole idea of having the biggest action scene in the center, I think it was pretty smart. I think Colin wanted to have this massive scene in the center, and I think it was clever that once you have delivered what the people is expecting, then you focus in a more claustrophobic and tight and suspenseful second half. And I think that's the way of growing up. So it's going from accumulation and seeing all these fireworks to building up and to create a mood that puts the audience at the edge of their seats. So we had this massive scene that we have to, of course, start thinking about it, thinking about the every single scene that creates that whole sequence full of small scenes and small moments. It starts in the bunker with the baryonyx, starts with Owen and the Sinoceratops with the lava, takes you to the bunker and the baryonyx, takes you where they all come together with the volcano, and from the volcano takes you to that moment in the lock, and then the Carnotaurus fight, and then, I mean, it's such a massive thing, but it's just bit by bit. And for me, when I work in a movie, it's always the same process. It's like drawing every single frame.
Yeah.
And then you start to build up, you know, even though it's accumulation, it's a lot of fireworks. The whole scene is designed shot by shot in order to create the most satisfying experience when you watch it.
You mentioned Spielberg a couple of times. Has he seen the film?
Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah, it was very nice. You know, it was working with Steven was one of the reasons I wanted to be involved in Jurassic. And as soon as he watched the movie and he called us immediately and said that he was very happy that somehow this movie takes him back to the first Jurassic movie. He thought that all the filmmakers involved in this one, we had honored the memory of the first Jurassic Park.
That you must have been quite stressed waiting for that phone call.
Steven Spielberg is going to ring you today and tell you what he thinks of your movie.
It was kind of like they told me, oh, Steven is going to watch the movie this weekend. So I was like, I wasn't expecting any call. I was expecting okay, so on Monday they will tell me what he thinks about it. And he called us immediately after the screening, and he was very, very happy. He just wanted to tell us that he felt that we honor the first Jurassic Park.
That's amazing. It's definitely got that Spielberg feel to it. Because I remember we spoke to Colin when the first movie came out, and you know, they make a big deal of seeing the Amblin logo at the beginning of the movie. It's a Universal and an Amblin movie. And the final shot of the movie with Blue, that is a Spielberg town at magic hour. It just looks like E.T. could be taking place down
yeah,
there.
Yeah, it's shot very close from where E.T. That's what we were thinking. Shot. Yeah. Which makes it kind of like, you know, I think it's a very interesting movie, the way it sells the Jurassic universe to and makes it move forward to the future. But at the same time, it's a fun movie. It's a movie that tries to get an emotional connection with all the nostalgic elements of the other films, and it's Steven Spielberg movies at the same time. So I thought it was a great way of ending the movie, like putting this character that we all love, Blue, in the place of another character from Steven that we all love, you know, that E.T., you know?
That's cool. Talk about the balance between the old and the new, because this movie kind of tries to dig into a little bit of the past of John Hammond, and it has Dr. Ian Malcolm kind of framing the movie. But obviously, Jurassic World is about Claire and Owen and Blue and these new characters. What's it like kind of balancing that? Because, you know, obviously the temptation, like the other Jurassic Park sequels did, was like, bring back Ian Malcolm, bring back Dr. Alan Grant, Ellie Sadler. How hard is it to, like, leave some of that stuff behind, but also kind of maybe dig into it?
I think one of the things that I was more interested in is how this movie puts the Jurassic World upside down, and how somehow the man... You show how man is replaced from the center, and the place is taken by the dinosaurs. And for example, when we were talking about this iconic shot, there's one of the shots that you can see is the shot of the mirror of the Jurassic Park car.
Yeah.
And it's instead of reflecting a T-Rex, now it's reflecting Owen.
Right.
So it's like a statement telling you now man is taking the place of the dinosaurs, and dinosaurs replacing men from the center of life, you know? That's the whole idea.
Yeah.
There's a moment that you can see human people inside a diorama, and there's a dinosaur looking at them in the outside, which is the opposite.
Okay.
So you play all the time looking for these iconic shots, but somehow they need to have a meaning. They need to work for Fallen Kingdom. It's not just about nostalgia. It's about use nostalgia, but in a meaningful way, in a way that you keep telling the story of Fallen Kingdom. And what I like about Fallen Kingdom is the fact that it's the second episode, is where the things get more complicated, is the knot of the story, when everything gets more uncertain. And as a director, that's very exciting, because you can cross the red lines. And this is why we needed Malcolm back, because he's always playing the voice of conscience. And we needed this character again, telling us what was the right thing to do and what is the wrong thing to do, and remind us the red lines that we are crossing in this chapter.
We stayed the very, very final after the credits shot, where obviously these dinosaurs have reached Vegas. The stakes feel like they're quite high now, because not only have you done away with the island, where things like everything we've seen in Jurassic Park films has kind of been controlled. Like, they've had the island, they've had, you know, a little bit when the dinosaur in The Lost World came to sort of the suburbs. Now it feels like they're completely let loose. Other stakes just have to be like the highest ever for the next one.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think there are two big subject matters in this movie. One is the idea of losing control. This is a movie about losing control. And it takes you to a very exciting place at the end. I think one of the best things about Jurassic World 2 is that as soon as it finishes, you want to see Jurassic World 3.
Yeah.
You know, that's it's great. But at the same time, it talks about empathy, and it's a beautiful thing to talk about, especially when you put that element in what is the relationship between Owen and Blue, I think someone the other day was telling me, I think this is the movie that I fell in love with dinosaurs. You know, I from being scared of them.
Yeah.
Now I wanted all the dinosaurs to be alive, and even the dangerous ones.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
There is a moment at the end of the story where you can see the Indoraptor dying, and there is a bit of compassion about it, about him. You know, it's kind of like King Kong thing.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
That you feel sorry about the Indoraptor dying, like just 1 second before he dies in front of you, you know?
Yeah, I actually thought maybe you were gonna kill off Blue as well, and I was like, you better not kill off Blue, man. When he was born, I was like, oh my God, they're both gonna hit it, and they're both gonna die. So I'm glad you didn't.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun designing that shot, because you think that Blue is gonna die, but in the last frames, you can tell that he survives.
You also put in some very cute baby dinosaurs.
Yeah.
Cute baby Blue.
Yeah, it was amazing. Very important to. I think Blue is the heart of the story.
Yeah.
I really liked how, right in the middle of the movie, you have this surgery on Blue, because it's like telling the audience this is the heart of the story. And from that moment on, everything changes. Even the relation that Owen has with Blue changes in that moment on. And I think, for example, the first time you see Owen is very brave. The way he behaves about Blue, he doesn't care about Blue dying.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
At least this is what he says. But then in the surgery, you can tell that relationship is totally different, that the whole movie changes in that moment. I really like, that was the idea of one of the editors, that we are cutting in between the surgery and Maisie looking at the computer, where you at the same time are seeing.
Yeah, it works
Owen.
Really well.
Yeah.
Yeah, and soundly you can tell how all these characters are connected to each other.
Yeah.
Through this idea of using Blue, you know, and I really like that moment.
And also the surgery scene, the animatronics are fantastic, because there's a lot of puppetry in the movie.
There is a lot of puppetry and there is a lot of mixing techniques, puppetry with CGI.
In the original Jurassic Park, like famously, the dinosaurs aren't in the movie that much, and when they are, a lot of it is a blend or it's puppetry.
Yeah, that scene, for example, it's a very good example of how we merge different techniques, because you think it's an animatronic most of the time, and most of the time it's an animatronic, but there's a lot of CGI in that scene. For example, and this is one of the cheats that I was trying to get with the visual effects guys. You have shots in that scene where you see Blue laying on that boxes, and the head of Blue is the animatronic, and suddenly we replace the hands with CGI hands.
Right.
And then we cut to a close up of the actors, and then when we go back to the shot, we replace the head, and the head is CGI, and the hands are real.
Right. Okay.
So it gets to a moment that even myself, I was lost in the visual effects review, like asking the guys, so what is that? This is CGI or this is animatronic? And that's what I was looking for.
Yeah.
Like cheat the audience in a way that they don't know what they're watching. And of course, when you have animatronics, you have the best reference possible in terms of light, color, and textures for the CGI.
Yeah.
So I always push to use animatronics, even though sometimes we don't use them, but they make the work of the visual effects guys a lot easier.
I don't think I could be on set with a T-Rex head, even if I knew it wasn't real. Just seeing those eyes open, I think I've just shit myself. I couldn't be anywhere near.
Exactly.
That.
And this is the kind of excitement you're looking for with the actors. I was so shocked the first time we were with Chris and Bryce in front of an animatronic, and they were so excited. I realized they didn't have animatronics in the previous movie because they felt like kids, like on set, you know. And you use that excitement for the scene. I think animatronics are very helpful for the visual effects guys, but they're incredibly helpful for the actors.
I think in this movie, for the first time for the series, the dinosaurs really feel like tactile, because you have them licking people, or they're like they have mucus and they're slobbering.
The fact that I shot A Monster Calls before Jurassic was a great learning experience, and one of the things that I wanted to enhance in this one or make better thinking about Jurassic World is the interaction when you see the characters touching the dinosaurs. So I remember that in the first Jurassic World, they had these gray sculptures. And one of the first things that I asked the visual effects guys is that we had to paint the textures, not make gray sculptures, but paint the textures. So when they touch the dinosaurs, you can rescue some of those textures, and you have the impression that the actors are really touching the CGI.
Yeah.
And it works really well. There's a scene at the end when Owen is saying goodbye to Blue.
Yeah.
And you can tell that that's CGI. It's impossible to say, and it's a perfect CGI.
Yeah.
And it's because we had that real face, that real head, totally painted,
moved
by a guy, so it moves in a very organic way.
Yeah.
And then we replace it digitally with that reference, and it looks totally perfect.
That's awesome. There's always been like a rumor around like sort of the internet and things like that that an early version of a sequel to Jurassic Park had them messing with genes and splicing the dinosaurs with humans. Do you ever think that that could be a possibility? It feels like that's kind of where you're going. Because if you've done the Indoraptor, you've chucked the most dangerous dinosaurs together, surely the most dangerous animal on the planet is man.
Mm-hmm.
Do you reckon that could ever happen?
I heard about that. And we thought about that while we were doing this one.
Yeah.
Somehow we thought that we were crossing too many red lines in this one, so we decided not to go there.
Yeah.
But I'm sure that, I'm sure there's space for a lot of Jurassic movies in the future, so who knows?
Well, this movie specifically leads into the next movie, and you have, without knowing specifics, you know kind of maybe what kind of movie it is. How much are you involved with mapping out that next one with Colin? And are either you going to be looking to direct it, or do you think it's nice that the franchise moves to another director?
No, I think especially it's nice that the franchise finishes with the person who started it all, so with Colin. Yeah. So I think it's great the fact that he can go back and finishes the story that he started. And he has a plan for the whole trilogy. I don't know much. I know enough in order to, I knew enough in order to be able to do this one. And I know that there are elements in the story that are like a seed for the future.
Yeah.
And you will see that. And there are some lines, there are some moments that are there for the third movie. But apart from that, I cannot tell you much about it.
Talking about, I remember watching the original Jurassic Park. I was 7, and I remember being so excited, but also like turning and facing my mother when certain people got killed, when Nedry got killed, when Muldoon got killed. And in this movie, you cut away a lot of the time when someone gets killed, except one character, and it's quite gory. Like his hand gets bitten off.
Yeah.
How much were you thinking that you wanted to push things in that case? Because that's quite gruesome.
It's funny that I know what you're talking about, and we were in the premiere, and there was someone on my back saying, thinking that that character was going to survive. And he was shouting, come on, he needs to die.
You're like, yeah, he will die in quite a spectacular way.
Exactly. So basically, I think as I was saying, this is like the Jurassic stories are like moral tales. You know, they tell you what is the right thing and the wrong thing to do. And you know, it's like in fairy tales, at the end, the bad guys always die. So that's the way you work in these stories, you know.
We saw in the credits a thanks to Guillermo del Toro.
Mm-hmm.
How much was he giving you advice on this? Was it
pretty much? You know, from the very beginning, I've been supported. Of course, he produced The Orphanage, but we've been talking. We're friends, and we talk about the things that we're doing. And every time I'm in a situation that it's my first time, I call him and I ask for advice, and he was there all the time, so I decided to put him on the credits.
That's good.
He's so nice. Like, we've interviewed him a couple of times.
He's a great director, but he's even a greater
human. Like, when he came in here, we spoke about the movie Crimson Peak, and then he just stayed around for 10 minutes, and we were talking about books and toys, and yeah, he's brilliant.
Yeah, he talked about the video game Silent Hills that he almost had off the ground, and he was telling us loads of secrets about that. And we were like, after we'd stopped rolling, it was like, why couldn't you have said that on the podcast? He's so much, such good stuff. Like, are you a video games guy at all? Or
not really, not really.
Because one thing we always ask everyone on the podcast when they come on for their favorite movie, their favorite TV show, and their favorite video game. So do you have a favorite one of any of those?
Favorite movie?
Yeah. Ever.
Ever.
Yeah.
I mean, it's impossible to say. For example, last night I went to the theater to see 2001.
Okay. The
unrestored version.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing better than that. I mean, it's the greatest example of what filmmaking could be. And as Guillermo talks about all the time, you know, when we talk about movies, he says, and this is something that you can 100% apply to 2001, it's something that you cannot do on theater, you cannot do on a television, it's something that you can only watch on a movie screen.
Yeah.
And it's a combination of music, picture, sound. I mean, that's cinema, that's filmmaking, you know? And then, and that would be probably my choice. Yeah. But if you ask me, thinking about it personally, I think my favorite movie is not that one, it's Superman, the original one.
Okay.
Because it's the first movie that I saw.
Yeah.
I was 3 years old and I was so shocked. I discovered for the first time, not just Superman.
Yeah.
And the fact that the man could fly,
yeah.
But also cinema, you know, yeah.
That movie is
that's
incredible.
The kind of movie that exactly the same way you were talking about Jurassic.
Yeah.
I used to watch that movie every single day in my life. So probably if you count the times I've seen that movie, it would be like 200, yeah. 300, 400 times, you know.
There's a scene in that movie that really scared me as a kid, and it's when his dad has the heart attack.
Yeah.
And it's just Superman can't do anything to save him, and it's really just really depressing.
That's the John Ford section of the movie. That's so beautiful.
Yeah, what a great film.
Do you have a favorite TV show?
Twin Peaks. I love that. Well, I love David Lynch, you know, and I think that's something, again, it's something that you cannot do. That's a perfect definition for what a TV show could be.
Yeah.
You know, because it's something that you cannot do in cinema, you know, and David Lynch was able to put that art, his craft, into a TV show, and he created that amazing thing that is so beautiful and unexplainable and enigmatic, and it's an amazing thing.
And just finally, as a podcast, big fans of the film The Prestige. Have you seen The Prestige?
Yeah, sure.
Do you like it?
Yeah.
this is a silly thing we ask everyone we ever interview. Do you like The Prestige?
Yeah,
I like Prestige.
We haven't found anyone.
It's not my favorite Chris Nolan's movie, but
okay.
What's your favorite Chris Nolan movie?
I have a weird option, and I told him once, and he was very surprised. I really, really, really like Enigma. What was the title of
Memento?
No, the one that he did with Robin Williams.
Insomnia.
Oh, Insomnia. I love that film, yeah.
It's a remake of a Norwegian film?
I think so, yeah.
No, Enigma was another movie. Insomnia, yeah. It's a remake of I think it's a Swedish movie.
Yeah, also, yeah. It's brilliant. It's really good.
It was his first movie for Warner Brothers.
Yeah. I love that movie. And I told him it's very emotional. You think about Chris Nolan, and a lot of people think he's not an emotional director, but that movie was pretty emotional.
Yeah, it's a weird criticism that. Like, he always gets that. But I think all his movies make me feel quite emotional.
Yeah.
Like the scene in Inception, the suicide scene, or the idea of like the image of the hands on the train tracks turning into old hands.
Absolutely.
It's a beautiful image. Like, it's a weird criticism that you always get with his movies.
Yeah, of course. It's true. If you see Interstellar or Dunkirk, you know, they're pretty emotional.
But The Prestige is good, and you like it, so that's fine.
Yeah, it's not my favorite one.
Okay, good. Thank you very much. What a lovely man. And what a great film that he made, which we're going to talk about now. So, I mean, if you hadn't switched off because of spoilers before, there's definitely going to be spoilers now because I've written it down as spoiler chat.
He's made loads of good films now.
So, Carter, you saw last night?
Yeah.
You like it?
I enjoyed it, yeah. Thought it was good. Good fun, isn't it? It's mad. All the dinosaur films, all the Jurassic World. They're starting to call it, I think it was Dale I was talking to last night. Apparently this is now being referred to as just the Jurassic films.
Well, I use that in something we've written because what else? Like, it's weird to call them Jurassic World when it's more than it's referring back to old stuff, because it feels weird when the best one in the series and the most famous one,
it's not called
you that. Dropping its name, because I still want to call this one Jurassic Park.
Yeah,
in a weird way.
I've done it like four times.
But yeah,
like when we're
this
it.
One's absolutely insane. But it's good fun.
I think it's a necessary film for the franchise, because we've talked about this loads. Those movies do not, that original movie does not lend itself to a sequel.
No.
And Jurassic World kind of worked because enough period of time passed that you could basically restage the first one but on a bigger scale.
Yeah.
But if they want, you know, that film made like a billion. It's one of the highest grossing movies ever.
Yeah.
So they obviously want to franchise it like all these big films. Something needed to change, and that's what this film is. Yeah. For better and for worse, whether you think it's ridiculous where it goes, at least it's going to be different, and there's more of a through line.
Yeah.
Because we were saying this morning when we were having a cup of tea, there's no reason for any of these characters to ever go back to the island unless you deceive them or emotionally blackmail them, like in the case of Grant and Malcolm in 3 and Lost World. And they kind of do that in this film as kind of a almost like a joke, like a point where let's get them back to the island, but let's do that all in the first act and then literally blow up the island.
Yeah.
So that's kind of now gone.
Yeah. That's the thing. When obviously you heard they were going to make another one, because I remember like a thing that we talked about after we saw the first one was like, man, that is a cool, like just a film. It's just a self-contained film. It's just like, it doesn't have, it does not go anywhere. Jurassic World, that's fine. Like that was a cool little return to it, it's fine. But obviously now they're going to make their plan was to make three of them. But I don't know. It's just, I just really, really liked all of this. Like, I think when we watched it together, like, we spent so much of it just looking at each other and going,
I think it's quite an exhilarating film.
Yeah.
Like, it goes by quick. It's a good pace to it.
That's the thing. Like, every sequence stumbles into the next. Like, those brilliant action films like Raiders does. Like, I'm not saying it's as good as Raiders, but it's a similar thing where everyone tumbles into the next. Like, Abrams' Star Trek just keeps going.
Yeah.
And that sequence tumbles directly into the next one. It's not like breaking passage of time.
I thought that was generally a good thing. And there are still quiet moments, and I think like the opening sequence when they're on the island and getting attacked
it's
by the Mosasaurus and the T-Rex.
That opening 5-10 minutes is brilliant.
And also, like, I saw it again last night. Like, it feels like that looks like Jurassic Park. Like, just the rain hammering down, like the big yellow raincoat. Like,
I think like he's ticking a lot of boxes in that first sequence where it's like at night time and the use of like weather and stuff. It's like he's ticking the boxes.
I think it's definitely the best shot Jurassic Park film. There's some shots there that are just beautiful, that could be in like the most beautiful horror films.
Well, I think you could say it could be in a proper film.
Like the right at the start when they're sending up the boy with
fucking
and
amazing.
The lightning goes and the shadow of the Mosasaurus. That's it, isn't it?
Yeah, and there's a bunch of like good...
The one as well with the girl, the reflection in the glass, and you
really
see
good.
The teeth.
Yeah.
That was almost like it. That was good.
Yeah.
Very good stuff.
I just love how it's basically two. You could split that into two films if you wanted, but it's good that they did one big pacey film. Because you basically got, for an hour, a big disaster rescue film, and then for an hour, like a haunted house, like creepy film.
Well, it's like a proper, like, this proper piece of gothic filmmaking, like. We said like the fall of the House of Lockwood, but it's got all the classic things that a gothic novel has, and I think that's why they brought Bayona on, which you've just heard in the interview. But it's like buried secrets, past coming back to intrude upon present day. Doppelgangers are a thing in gothic novels. It's all there, and it's almost like you can see why Trevorrow went, he'd be really good. And but also the way that they stage some of that stuff, like the house literally rips itself apart at the end. But this, the use of like shadow is really good in that it's almost like there's a sequence where it's going in the bedroom, it's like Nosferatu going up the stairs.
Yeah, that's awesome. I really liked we talked about it, like in the museum bit, there's so many bits which are like sort of false, like bits where you see like, oh, is that it? No, that's just one of the bits in the museum. That's not the actual Indoraptor.
I did
love
that.
That is the Indoraptor, but behind one of the dinosaurs.
I liked Bayona's point when we were talking to him about that sequence. When he says, like, the inversion where, like, foreshadowing the end of the movie, the humans are in the exhibit and the dinosaur is looking in at them.
Yeah.
That's kind of a cool little staging.
Yeah. I do think... That was the only thing that we came out of it. I think we've talked about it a lot, and I framed around the stuff that Bayona said. It feels like the people making the film think that everything is gone to proper shit by the end. Whereas by the end of it, I just thought, A couple of dinosaurs.
20 dinosaurs around.
20 dinosaurs run around. A couple of them are in Vegas.
All that have trackers in.
Yeah.
And it's not, like, we were saying this, at the end it's almost like, welcome to Jurassic World.
Yeah.
It's almost like Planet of the Apes. But humanity has not been harmed. It's not like there's a virus that's killing all of humankind off. So all the world's governments could easily find and kill those dinosaurs.
Yeah, got one T-Rex, a couple of velociraptors. Like,
One 25-year-old T-Rex.
Yeah.
I also like, you know, so we see that shot.
Oh, I love her. I love her.
We see that T-Rex shot good, of...
Do you know what her name is?
No.
Well, Rexy is what her name is in the books. Unofficially, Roberta is what she's referred to in the film. Never referred to in the film. I think it's more like maybe someone has referred to her in an interview or something.
That'd be a quiz question. Roberta is the name of which action film star or hero?
But everyone, when we interviewed Bryce Dallas Howard and Chris Pratt the other day, they referred to her as Rexy.
She saves the day in three movies now.
Yeah. This is a good question. How many humans has that T-Rex killed?
One.
Before Fallen Kingdom, yeah.
None?
One person.
Gennaro.
Yeah.
Oh, him, yeah.
Because it's different dinosaurs in Lost World and Jurassic Park 3.
There we go.
Yeah. I saw it says in Powers yesterday, how many in Powers is like 40. It's like you don't even see it like kill 40
weirdly,
in the film.
What a weirdly specific and non-specific number at the same time.
Yeah. He also said to me when I asked him, he goes, oh, by the way, I'm making it look like I'm thinking about it, but I'm just gonna guess.
Yeah. It's not really something you can estimate, is it? Like,
it was really good. But yeah, someone pointed out, because I reviewed it for IGN, and someone pointed out going, it's actually called Rexy in the novel and Roberta in the film. I was like, shut up. We're calling it Rexy because Chris Pratt called it Rexy. I thought...
Did you think it was better than Jurassic World?
I did.
I don't think I do. I think they're on about a par for me.
Yeah.
I think what I look for in a Jurassic Park film is like the original Jurassic Park, that at least that first half an hour of everyone having fun.
Mm.
And a bit of lightness, whereas this one didn't really have any of that. It was all kind of miserable, which I know they were going for that because they wanted more of a horror film, but I think you need that little peak of happiness in the story.
But then that goes back to, it's just like hard to keep doing that, and that's why World benefits from being Jurassic Park if it was up and running.
Yeah.
Like, you can't do that on like a 3U basis.
Yeah.
Because there's... It would be just nothing but horror if they actually got out.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, because I think we
I know what you mean. Like, for me, it's the same thing. Absolutely, like, there's that sequence of wonder. It's the Brachiosaurus moment.
Yeah.
It's the kid looking out of his bedroom and window in the hotel.
Very
briefly, this is amazing.
Yeah. They very briefly had that with a Brachiosaurus in this one.
Yeah, you can
see it. But then they have also the inversion of it where it's
devastating.
Dying, and it does the kind of... It's that moment again.
That's fucking horrible, that is. Mm. But... Oh, I forgot what I was going to say now.
It's good, isn't it?
Because we had a really good conversation after we saw Jurassic World, which was like, we wished that all the bad stuff that had happened, because except for the pteranodons going mental in the actual part of the park in Jurassic World, like the Indorex like never gets to there while the people are there.
Mm.
So people get off before it. So they could have... It would have been almost like a creepier bit of keeping them all in this one pen. And those people who were there for that day of the incident never knew what happened, and then they get released and sorted. And then,
well, that would be like a cover-up thing.
Yeah. I think that would be a bit creepier.
There is an interesting thing that the next movie will face, especially because I think the bigger threat is the people that have bought the dinosaurs.
Yeah.
What they're going to do, whether they're going to weaponize them, mass-produce them. But there is a problem with, like... The Jurassic World movie. Well, let me just finish my point. It's like, if dinosaurs get out and in population of people, they can't just go around killing people, because that is an 18 movie.
Yeah.
Like in the Avengers, you can rip robots apart, you can rip aliens apart.
Yeah.
And in the Jurassic Park films, it's been very few casualties. Like you just said, T-Rex killed one person.
Yeah.
And usually it's kind of cut away.
Yeah.
But if they're roaming around cities, you're going to it's quite difficult to depict the carnage without depicting the violence.
That's a really hard thing with Blue as well. At the end, we see her overlooking like that, like Spielberg town, and you're like,
she's gonna just go kill loads.
Is she just gonna go kill everyone?
Because she's meant to be really empathetic, but she's just like,
I felt like
yummy.
I felt like that last bit was her kind of more going into hiding, because she kind of looks at the cage and looks at her and goes, I just want to run. Like, I don't want anything to do with humans.
She's overlooking a town.
I think she's more scared of humans at this point than wants to kill them.
Yeah, maybe.
She's gonna have to, but there's also like, she's gonna have to eat something.
Yeah.
We wonder, like, in the next movie, whether there's like these, like the Russian guy and the Chinese people who bought like the dinosaurs, whether they've just like weaponized them.
Well, that's
and that's what they're facing. Because otherwise, it's like, I don't know, because they're driving off in that Jeep like it's the end of the apocalypse.
Well, I don't know if they've ever got their dinosaurs, because I assume they've all gone
down.
Packed
off of meat. No, they're packed off of meat. You see them going in trucks off.
So there are definitely some that have been given to
I think they make a particular plot point of like, you bought it, it's gone.
There's even a shot. There's even
see
a
them
shot
loading up. Yeah. But that's, I think, to allow the next one that they're in private hands.
Because you even see like, because we were like, that is a very, very good
It's
auction.
Efficient.
Yes, very
efficient.
We were
saying, like, they've probably Amazon nailed them. Yeah.
Because
like,
that's where they are. Because that's why, because we were talking about it, you asked why Owen went, what was his plan with the lever when he stops the Indominus and going down? It's like, the reason he's stopping that is because that's going straight on a truck, straight to that person who's bought it, and straight to that crazy Russian
28 millions.
if he's got 100 million, he knows it's not plural.
Yeah.
He knows it's not 62 millions.
62 millions.
I looked up that guy. He's English, and he was last in Holby City, was the thing he did before this.
That is the equivalent of the Mission Impossible TV series. When they used to do Russian text, you just write the R's backwards.
Yeah. we talked about it a bit, actually. Like, I do like a good auction sequence.
Under the hammer.
Yeah. Oh, the one in North by Northwest is incredible.
Yeah, but
the dinosaur is in the attic.
But that's the thing, right?
Dion Dublin.
But that's the thing. I do love a good auction. He was too efficient with it. I felt like it was not the drama in the auction should have been a little bit more, considering they're selling the last remaining species of these fucking dinosaurs. And he's just like, it feels like he doesn't let it go. He's like, sold 12 million. Like,
I love how he goes,
I think you should let that go a little bit further, mate. To be honest.
I love how he goes, this is a prototype, you can't have it. Someone goes, 20 million. Who wants it?
I know, it's terrible business.
Yeah, really bad. You kind of showed your hand a bit and be like, oh, they're going to sell it. Fuck it then. He goes for $43 million
like
that goes for.
Selling a concept car. He's got no engine in it.
Yeah. He goes for $43 million. Gareth Bale went for double that for Real Madrid. They could have bought two Indoraptors.
Indoraptor win three Champions Leagues in 4 years?
Can we just... we actually have it on audio, Gav. Devaluing Gareth Bale.
Yeah, I won't have that either.
I love Gareth Bale. Is he as good as two Indoraptors?
Can he do a bicycle kick from 20 yards?
can an Indoraptor?
I reckon Gareth Bale could rip someone's head.
An Indoraptor knows to play dead, even though it has never seen another dinosaur play dead, or has never seen another dinosaur be trank, but it knows to play dead. So that someone who collects teeth is going to get into his cage and eat it.
If you draft two Indoraptors today in our World Cup fantasy football, I'm going
to
be
pissed. I also don't
know
how you program someone's genome to track red dot sites.
No, it isn't programmed. You know, they've trained it.
They've trained
it.
Yeah, they've trained it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
On who? Who are these dead people?
It's just like an attack dog, isn't it? Yeah, it's more intelligent than a dog.
Is it, though?
Yeah.
Yes. I did like that. I think we talked about it a bit because Bjorn, you were here in the interview, he talked about like how well they use CGI and like practical stuff.
There's loads of good practical stuff.
It's really good practical stuff. I think for the first time, like, you really get a sense of how disgusting these dinosaurs are. Like, there's lots of shots of snot. Oh,
yeah,
like,
I think the only thing it reminds
flies.
There's like one moment, particularly in the original, is when they squeeze that ulcer on the Triceratops' tongue.
Yeah.
They almost like looked at that and go, let's do more of that stuff.
Yeah.
When the Triceratops is just licking his face when he's paralyzed.
Oh, it's quite cute, isn't it?
Yeah. I don't think that is a Triceratops, but just so you know. No, it's got the big plate thing. It's a thing.
Sorry, I'm not a dinosaur expert.
That's
why I'm not in the lab. That's why I'm in the petting zoo.
What, misidentifying them to kids?
Oh, just give me a basic one. Get me on the stegosaurus.
I love the idea of you in a big egg going next to Triceratops going, T-Rex.
I'm not that
T-Rex.
I can't tell inside the egg.
There's supposedly
only,
only 11...
20 minutes a day. It's too hot.
There's supposedly only 11 species, so it can't be that many more.
Oh, you know, Darren, my fan stopped working.
Boiling. Splice me with something cool. You know, so this little tiny sequence. Yeah. I love the bit where... Triceratops has a fight and completely holds its own.
Oh, yeah,
Don't mess with Triceratops.
Yeah, that's really well good. But look, I think
that's my insight.
That's what I put in the review. Like the best things about Jurassic Park films, either when the dinosaurs are trying to eat the humans or when the dinosaurs are fighting each other. And there's quite a lot of both of that in this film, which I like. Maybe more fighting.
It's like criticism.
Yeah.
It's some ropey dialogue. Because the only thing I associate with the original Jurassic Park is really memorable dialogue. Yeah. And I know that's a bit chicken and egg in terms of, like, it's become such a famous film that things become... Right. So it's a phrase I use in the interview, that instantly iconic.
Yeah.
But there are so many quotable speeches and lines in that movie, whereas this, there are some stinkers. Like the Chris Pratt one that you said about the volcano.
Oh, yeah, where he's like, they go, come on, we gotta go, we're getting hot. And he's like, he looks up and the volcano's going up. He goes, it's about to get a whole lot hotter. He's like, who's saying okay to that? I think, like, yeah, we talked about it. That Maisie line I've seen twice now, where she releases the dinosaurs. She goes, I had to. They're like me. They're alive. Oh, fuck off.
I thought at that point she was going to turn into a dinosaur.
Oh, my God, that'd be amazing.
Imagine if she just went,
because they really zoom in. They zoom in on her eyes. I thought her eyes were going to do a weird thing. So they really hold on her eyes.
If the Dilophosaurus just spits in someone's face.
Do you think her eyes are going to do, like, the little lizard
eye? Maisie-saurus. Like the Mosasaurus.
They shouldn't have done it. They should have done it right at the end, like fucking Inception style, where, like, as it's coming,
she just looks the camera.
She's in the back of the car and it just goes, she's got a big tongue.
And then just breaks fourth wall, turns to camera and goes,
But they've now.
The end?
Jurassic World.
They've now set the precedent that human cloning is absolutely a thing.
Yeah, well, we
imagine if in the third
Fiona,
one, just like John Hammond reappears, they bring him back.
Oh my God.
Oh, CGI, it's like that scene from when they go on the tour of Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
It's like, hello, John. It's just loads
it's
of
real.
Eyes.
An army of Attenboroughs walking towards velociraptors. That's what I want at the end.
Loads of Muldoons. Yeah.
I did think as well, like I thought Ray Spall was generally good. I think he's good in pretty much everything.
He's good, sleazy.
What's his fucking end game with Lot? Was it so? Like, there's no way he's holding that auction in secret. Like, as soon as the dinosaurs get there, he's gonna like. Locke was not stupid. He is in bed, but he's gonna. If he goes, oh, I fancy
going
downstairs.
I feel like he made noise.
Yeah, I feel like going downstairs. What is that? Oh, it's an ankylosaurus being sold in my basement. Like, he must have always thought he was going to kill him.
It's a pretty dark scene when he suffocates him.
It's really nasty. Yeah,
it's a dark film.
It is a dark film.
We saw it at a screening, and in front of us was like a little kid.
Yeah,
he was. Terrified.
What was he doing?
Because it would be quite scary.
At one point I leaned over and told the mum to tell him to shut up, but I can't remember what he was doing.
He was like, I don't know.
Was
like,
he eating something?
He was
mad?
Getting something out of like this massive polythene bag.
Oh, that's it. Yeah, he was eating really noisily.
It's all right. When it started to kick off, he shit himself he quietened right up.
Yeah, little prick.
Anyway, good film, isn't it?
I genuinely thought it was brilliant. I've seen it twice now, and like, you can pick holes in and stuff, but like Dale was saying, he thought the action sequences are just all way too fast. But I didn't. I
think they're fast, but
that.
I think they're legible.
Yeah,
I think that's different. Like, there's some sequences that I think are fast, and I can't tell what's going on.
Yeah,
whereas there, I could always tell where the moving parts were.
Yeah.
And I loved them. Obviously, one of the early set pieces is the big volcano sequence. We talk about when the gyrosphere goes into the water.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it feels like continuous action.
Yeah.
I love the bit where he goes off to get air.
Yeah.
Because it's like, you never really see that in a movie. And it adds this moment of tension.
Yeah.
But it's actually a practicality. Me and Joe were talking about this, where he's like, oh, I need to go for air.
Yeah.
Be back in a sec.
In the employee handbook, one thing I did read.
Not allowed to go for air.
No. Is the gyrosphere is a bulletproof. That says it in the employee handbook.
Did you find out in the word search at the back?
Word search all about what the gyrosphere is about.
Indestructible.
Are they powering that? Is that just going downhill?
It's just going downhill, I think,
And it's getting like kicked around much.
Also, the only gyro that wasn't accounted for in Jurassic World is the one the kids go off on, and that gets destroyed by the Indorex. How is that one gyro just there?
It's a good plot point, isn't it?
It's, well, it's, little,
it's quite convenient.
It's the same as like Blue is living in the original car.
Yeah.
It's like, of all that island.
Yeah.
Sat that bit.
I liked all the little Blue bits.
Yeah.
Like when you see him when he's pretending going
and all the other raptors attack him.
Right,
and she's the one, she's like
yeah.
Also, yeah, very cute baby dinosaurs in this movie.
Yeah.
Mm. Right. My lovely little lovely little triceratops.
Yeah.
There was one. I love a little triceratops. Triceratops are my favorite, I think, of all the dinosaurs.
Out of everything, like, even though I'm not a massive fan of Chris Pratt's character, like, I don't think he's brilliant. I think sometimes it's really entertaining. But the one thing I do genuinely love...
He's Chris Pratt.
But also, the one thing I genuinely love is he always shows fear towards Blue and towards other dinosaurs. He's never like, even those bits where there's like baby dinosaurs, he's constantly afraid and showing uttermost respect to them. Mm. And even when he's with Blue,
yeah, he's not particularly a macho character, despite a leather waistcoat, which is quite a macho item.
And it's really interesting, like when the Indoraptor's about to attack him, and Blue comes in, he doesn't like hang about in that room to see like, oh, is Blue gonna be okay, anything like that. He's just like, that is. Even though he's got a connection to it, that is a fucking wild animal that I have no idea how it's going to react at any point. Mm. And he's constantly afraid of it. And I think that's a really cool thing.
Yeah, I see that. I like absolutely. That. I don't know whether it's because they didn't put enough groundwork in the first movie. Yeah. And also they've had this relationship and then they've had to break it up for 2 years for plot reasons that they're apart.
Yeah.
And because you're not privy to that, their thing doesn't really work.
No.
Because it would almost be better if they're together.
Yeah.
But if you've separated them for some reason. So when she goes and sees him, it is like a retread of the scene from the first movie. He's like in his house having a beer.
It's framed the same way.
It's framed the same way. He's up a ladder and stuff. Yeah. It's like, I feel like I've missed out on a thing. I'd rather we just come in and you're living together for 2 years.
Yeah.
I think that's more interesting.
I think that's way more.
Because I think they've done it because they're like, oh, it'd be better for the third movie for them to fall back in love and kiss in the third movie, but really? I don't...
Yeah, that's what I've written in the reviews. Like, I know the point is that Owen finds it easier to have these relationships with, like, these wild animals than he does with humans, and that's kind of part of him. But at the same time, it's just not interesting. And even when they're talking about the breakup story is like, oh, you told me if I wanted to go live in my van by the side of the road, I should. I did. I was like, I feel like there'd be a bigger breakup than that.
Yeah, I think it'd be funnier if they were a couple going through that. I don't think they're relating to... maybe it's because of the franchise history. I still haven't forgiven them for showing me that Ellie and... Grant didn't get together.
Yeah. Because it would have been...
And also, they do that in a cruel way because you think it's his baby.
Mm.
And then...
You do need to have the scene where she's trying to convince him to go. You could have that if they were a couple, though, because he could be done with dinosaurs fine.
But they could almost be on the point of breaking up. It's more interesting. It's like, will you stop doing all this campaigning bullshit?
Yeah.
Like, just leave them.
Because you could have a really good scene as well where she comes home after the hearing and goes, well, that's it there. And he's like, that is it. And now I want you to leave it.
And then the third one, they break up.
Yeah.
And then you end it.
If the next one starts with them not together, bloody hell.
Wait, so this is the thing. Okay, so where do you think the next one's going to start? Because we talked about it, and the way that Bayona talks about it is...
I have no idea.
So
they think it's like at the end of the Planet of the second of the Planet of the Apes film, where everything's gone fucking tits up. But it's not.
Unless there's a jump forward and it's all... But I do... There's a line in the original... Jurassic Park. It's like, who better to get my kids and my grandchildren through Jurassic Park than a dinosaur expert?
Yeah.
Who better to advise them in Jurassic World than a dinosaur expert? Get Alan Grant back. Because unlike the other movies, he's got no reason to not be involved now because it's come to him.
Yep.
Like, he didn't want any part of it anymore. He was embarrassed by it, but now he can't.
Or Laura Dern. She's both. Everything now. So she's having a both. Bit of a renaissance. So.
Get
you know,
her
she
in.
Was like 25 when she was in Jurassic Park.
Jesus.
Mad.
You got to get her in.
You know, I reckon both of them will be back. Or maybe, what's his name? The kid who was...
Nah.
Yeah?
He was in the Pacific.
He's good, he is. Nah. You know, he's going to play... What's his name? In the Queen biopic, and he looks exactly like him. Roger Taylor, I think he's playing, and he looks
John
a lot
Deacon.
Like him. Oh, no, he plays John Deacon. Yeah,
the Queen.
He's playing John Deacon, and he looks exactly like him. It's fucking weird.
I think you've got like he's got a feature like
get them all in. Get them all in.
If I saw those three together on film again, maybe a little bit too much.
Yeah, but I don't know where the plot. They can't.
They got to get them all in.
They can't set it up as a big one. It'd be mad if it's just like a war film. That'd be insane.
You've got Malcolm. You've got Grant. You've got Sadler standing
together. You can't not have them together.
Yeah. Meeting Chris Pratt as well. Meeting Chris Pratt and Bryce Dallas
Howard. I'd love to see what Grant's reaction to Blue is as a thing. Like,
Because as a thing, would you...
He's got to be consulted.
Yeah.
Like, if you were putting together, like, an emergency task force to deal with the situation, he's one of the first names you'd have on that sheet.
Yeah.
He's got more experience than anyone else.
But also, at the same time, I feel like Malcolm's reaction to it might be... Because he's had more dealings with a raptor. Like, the raptor tried to kill his fucking daughter and stuff. I can understand his fear being
I think it's better if
different.
There are odds. Like, if he started with, like, a committee, that'd be an amazing sequence.
But Grant... I don't know. I feel like he still has a bit of a respect.
No,
for
this is the next movie, Gav. Cardi, hear me out. We've seen 12 Angry Men.
Yeah.
The entire Jurassic World 3
one
is all the committee just tackling what they're going to do next.
Yeah.
And then at the end, they walk off into the courtroom to deliver their verdict. You don't see it. It's off camera.
Yeah.
And then it's just here. Da-na-na, and it ends.
That's it. Sounds good.
What I would like is the brief sequence
in Jurassic World 1. I'd like it if it was just basically it come down to Blue or the T-Rex. It's basically Predator but with a dinosaur and it's a task force in a jungle.
Tagline, whoever
with
wins,
Grant
we
leading
lose.
Them. Yeah. It's like, there's obviously the mercenaries trying to find him to use him as well.
Yeah,
so you've got that freeway battle going on.
Cardi, what's your pitch for Jurassic World 3? Three-way.
It's basically the movie version
three-way
of
in a
Evolve.
Jungle. Our servers just went offline for that.
Sadly.
Imagine Evolve, but they made it with Jurassic Park.
They should bring it back.
I think that's what that Ark Survive game is, I think.
Who knows?
We should have a go at that.
Good film, though, that, wasn't it?
That was. It was very, very good film. Do you know what else is very good?
Keyword Countdown.
Keyword Countdown. Time for Keyword Countdown. It's Keyword Countdown. Time for Keyword Countdown. It's Keyword Countdown.
OJA Bayona. That's good.
Is it new draft? Is he left back?
If you don't know what Keyword Countdown is, IMDb categorised their films by a bunch of crazy keywords. What I've done this week is taken 5 films, 10 keywords
apiece.
They're
not just the 5 Jurassic Park and World.
Oh, you spot it now. And there's a relevant link between them all. Film number 1. Lust for Money.
Disclosure.
Inheritance.
Indecent Proposal.
Inheritance.
Full House of Usher.
Loan Shark.
Get Shorty.
God, good film that is.
I'm drawing a blank on it.
Brother-brother relationship.
Legend.
Reference to George Bush. George Bush Senior as well.
Out of sight.
Siamese Twins.
The Prestige, obviously. Siamese Twins, that's quite specific.
Reunited Family. Disembodied Hand.
The Addams Family.
Oh.
I think that's a draw.
I think that is a draw.
Yeah,
I'm going to give you both that.
I don't know. I wouldn't like to call it. Let's slow that down in post, frame by frame. Oh.
3 points each, then.
More fun that way.
Addams Family. Last one.
Casting for that new movie.
Eccentric Family. Mm. Tall Man. Yeah, who is it? Charlize Theron
as
Morticia.
I assume Morticia. And what's your fella? Oscar Isaac.
He just should be him in the fucking...
Just do a live action
one. Do a live
version.
Action one.
The animation. It does lend itself very well for animation.
Yeah. Mm. Here we go. Mm. ampersand in title?
Me, you, and Dupree. It's not that, is it?
No, of course it's not. But do you know something interesting about Me, You, Dupree? It was filmed in Kualua Ranch in Hawaii, where they filmed a lot of the Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom.
Last point. So, well done.
Me, Myself, and Irene.
Nope. That was good. You didn't even know. Repeat sequel. Disease.
Wait.
Cure.
Well, it's always good to have a cure for a disease. Mm. Mm.
Cryogenics.
Batman and Robin.
Yes.
Oh.
5 points, Cooper. Well done.
Glass of stink.
Megalomaniac. Fourth part. Double entendre. Butler. Bat nipples. Well done. Two guesses to Cooper.
Bat nipples in multiple movies.
And 9 points to Cooper. 3 points to Cardi so far. Here we go.
It's on the third clip.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, because the first one, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, so we're both getting points.
You both get points for the first one, yeah. And one guess each. Here we go. Third film. Oh, actually, no. I'm going to do that one a bit later. Title spoken to character.
The Prestige.
That's a good question. Scene during opening credits.
Mission Impossible.
That's really weird that we both went for that.
Reference to 1936 Berlin Olympics.
What, Munich?
Speed.
What, sorry? 1936?
Berlin Olympics. Reference to. So it doesn't take place at that. Inability to move.
Misery.
It's a good guess.
Buried.
My left foot.
Interracial relationship.
Philadelphia?
Satire.
Training places.
TSA agent.
The terminal.
Reference to Barack Obama. Hypnosis.
What's that film? Trance.
Never seen that.
What's this movie?
Final clue. Quitting smoking.
Thank you for not smoking that film. What?
Title spoken to character, scene during opening credits, reference to 1936 Berlin Olympics.
What a weird assortment of things.
It's cool. Inability to move, interracial relationship, satire, TSA agent, reference to Barack Obama, hypnosis, quitting smoking, Get Out. Film number four.
Those were some hard clues for that one.
I quite like Bastard. It. Inability to move. I put that up early. I thought that'd be quite interracial relationship.
I didn't even
know. TSA agent. That's
trying to quit smoking did not click with me at all.
I don't remember. Yeah, I forgot about TSA agent.
But it's your game, Dan. It's fine.
Here we go, then. Film number four. 2020s.
Three Robot, is that set then?
Three word title.
I Am Legend.
Die Hard Scenario.
The Raid 2.
Pirate Broadcasting.
Three word title, you say?
Yeah. Media coverage. Molotov Cocktail. Tracking device.
That. How is this not Escape from New York?
Tied to a chair. Selling humans. Final clue, home invasion.
Panic room?
2020s, three-word title, Die-Hard Scenario. Pirate Broadcasting, Green Media Earth. Coverage, Molotov Cocktail, Tracking Device, Tied to a Chair, Selling Humans, Home Invasion, The Purge, Anarchy.
Oh, for sake.
Good film. Good film. Final film then. So both you go on two guesses. Oh, but no. Krupa, you're on two guesses. Cardi, you're on one. 3 points. Krupa, you got 9 points. So, Carly, you can still win this.
I know. Yeah. Maths.
Altered version of studio logo.
Inception.
Spy.
The Matrix.
Spy. The Bourne Ultimatum.
Casino Royale.
Bourne Supremacy.
Mistaken Identity.
Casino Royale.
Got it. Summersby.
I love that film.
Quantum of Solace.
Playing with someone's ear.
Reservoir Dogs.
Not playing with it. Homosexual villain.
Skyfall.
Skyfall. Yeah.
It's not none of these are Bond films.
I'm just saying.
Murdered before giving protagonist information.
I don't know.
Famous What's score.
Homosexual villain.
Famous
should be.
Score.
Easier.
Framed for murder.
Fugitive.
Alfred Hitchcock figure character.
North by Northwest.
Yes.
I said it earlier.
What's it? Fucking
North by Northwest.
I thought you were going to get that, Cardi. I was like, for that one last. Final clue, Mount Rushmore. So, Cardi, you get 5 points.
What was that Alfred Hitchcock clue?
Alfred Hitchcock figure character.
Right.
So, that's a mad clue. I don't know
for
if that's like...
one of his movies.
Yeah, I don't know if that's... he's in it? Or there's someone who looks like him in that, maybe? Because I know he did lots
cameos,
of cameos in
but
them.
But then it's like, directed cameos, the way of...
Yeah.
Well, anyway, it's a matter.
Do you know what the link is?
What are they again? Sorry, I didn't write them down.
Adam's Family, Batman and Robin, North by Northwest, Get Out, The Purge, Anarchy.
Auction scenes?
Auction scenes! They all feature...
That's mad earlier I went, North by Northwest has a banging auction scene.
I was like, you've got to get this. Yeah. I was like, funny last. Yeah, they all have very good auction scenes in them. There we go. That's it. That's
how can I not remember the Purge Anarchy's auction scene?
It's a fucking brilliant auction scene that we talked about last week. Oh, the 2 weeks before when I was on the podcast. Maybe you weren't on that then, no? So
I'm not listening.
Yeah. There we go. Thank you very much for listening. That was a Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom special. Let us know what you think of the film. IGN_UK podcast@IGN.com.
Enjoy your E3s.
Yeah, enjoy your E3s.
Good stuff, innit? Games, all that. Lovely.
Ciao.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Alexis Ohanian. You may know me as one of the co-founders of Reddit, but more recently, a large part of my identity is being a father to my two wonderful daughters. In my podcast, Business Dad, I'm hoping to open up the conversation about balancing careers and family. The one thing I constantly hear successful people say, without fail, is that they wish they'd spent more time with their kids. That's time no one can get back. So I decided to create Business Dad, to engage in the conversation about how we're spending our time now, providing a forum for successful dads to share their joys and challenges of being a working parent. You'll get to hear from a wide range of business dads, from Rainn Wilson and Guy Raz to Todd Carmichael and Shane Battier. And while this podcast will talk about business and will definitely be featuring dads, I think everyone can learn something from these incredible conversations as we unpack the expectations we all have about careers, relationships, and ourselves. Business Dad is available now, so be sure to listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.